if I could disseminate something like into the collective conscious, it would be the decision for all of us just to, you know, be like, I'm gonna cap what I make at a certain point and decide what that is. Mm-hmm. And then the rest I'll work for those around me. Mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah.
So for everyone, that number would be a little different, but then we wouldn't get situations. I think a lot of companies, the way they're organized, it's like some people are making $10 million a year and then everyone else is making like $50,000.
Yeah.
And that's not healthy. How many dinners do you want to eat tonight? Like, do you, after your first dinner, it's like the second dinner has no value to you.
Definitely.
And that applies to our abundance too. Mm-hmm. So I, when I made that decision, I say like it relieved a great burden from me.
So not like always chasing more and more, but like putting a limit on it.
Yeah. It's like, I'll chase what is actually valuable for me, but mm-hmm. at a certain point, these resources are less valuable to me than they would be to someone in my immediate vicinity.
Hello and welcome to Curious Ones podcast by Andara. I'm Yael Ginsberg, the host of the podcast, a yoga and meditation teacher and philosophy lover. Each week you will hear eye-opening interviews with the different teachers of the Andara Yoga Institute, located in beautiful Baja, Mexico, along with other teachers that pass through here. This life-changing knowledge shared through authentic, heartfelt communication will help you live a happier, more fulfilled, and connected life. Let's dive in. I just want to say thank you so much for listening, watching, sharing the episodes with your friends, with your loved ones. It means so much, and we thank you for your support. I'm also very excited to have my spontaneous guest with me, Adam Carney. Adam is the founder of East West Yoga School and a functional medicine clinic named Wisdom in Portland.
I feel like we should explain yes. how this happened. I was literally just sitting at lunch. I'm on a retreat right now
with
Bhakti Fest. And you just came over to lunch and were like, hey, do you want to jump on this podcast? Let's schedule a time. I'm like, well, let's just do it right now.
Yeah.
So here we are.
So this is the least prepared I have ever been for a podcast.
Which is great because I don't prepare for anything.
Oh, okay. Well, that's interesting since you are very entrepreneurial and you have so many things that you did.
Yeah. I think like the business necessitates some degree of preparation, but I think things are always more interesting when you keep it at the minimum.
What do you mean?
I learned this from running yoga events. Like mm-hmm. when I first started doing them, I thought that we needed to structure like every day and every hour. And when I started I learned this from teachers in India, mm-hmm. is that Indians don't think like that. Like I think sometimes it's hard for us to even relate to how their minds work. Mm-hmm. But they don't use their minds the same way that we do. Mm-hmm. They very much just follow what's happening in a moment. And all of the best moments that I've ever had on yoga retreats or trainings, they just come from teachers like spontaneously doing whatever feels good.
Yeah.
And that to me is like, it's so alluring to be around people from India because they just operate like that. Mm-hmm. So I think I've just picked up a little bit of that over the years being around so many Indian people.
I love that. And I totally understand what you're talking about because we have a tendency, or I can speak about myself, I have a tendency to feel like I need to really plan everything to the smallest detail.
Yeah.
And then what happens actually is when we do that is that we lose the room for like the miracle to happen, you know?
Right.
Exactly.
Right. Life is so uninteresting when it goes according to our plans. It gets really, really interesting. It draws us in when stuff happens that's outside of our capacity to understand.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Yeah. I need to like take a moment to have that set in, like things that happen that are outside of our capacity to understand.
Yeah, actually in Sikh culture, they say Waheguru, mm-hmm. which is a common greeting.
Yeah.
They say it's a Kundalini chant also. One of the uses for that, as one of my teachers explained to me, is that there's a connotation of like that which I cannot comprehend, that is God. So there's the boundary of what we do understand, what we can understand with our mind, but God to in this culture isn't in there, or maybe he is, but that's where we can find source. God is in the things that we can't understand. And it's by the nature of us not being able to understand it that makes it, it makes it beyond us. So when you say Waheguru, you're saying, I'm finding God in you through unknown. So you would say it to someone that you don't know.
Wow. That's beautiful. And I totally understand what you mean. Like when we plan everything to the smallest detail, we take out the opportunity or the space for something that is beyond our even capabilities to come in.
That's right. Mm-hmm. That's right.
And I feel like for me, like I started telling you on the walk over here about this trip that I've been on, but I left on this trip without really knowing what's going to happen. I had loose plans for the first few months.
So you started what, just being on a yoga retreat here and then...
I had a wedding I wanted to go to in Virginia, and I wanted to do a 300-hour. And other than that, everything was very loose. I didn't know how long I was going to stay. I didn't know really how it's going to look like. And I kept reminding myself to stay open and allow whatever happens.
Yeah.
8 months later, I've been living at this incredible yoga school on the beach of Mexico and doing a podcast with incredible people.
What's the coolest experience you've had so far here?
Oh, I mean, I think the interviews, I get to sit one-on-one with people that I admire and just like ask them whatever I want to ask.
But there hasn't been any like crazy spiritual revelations or...
Well,
Kundalini awakenings or anything like that.
We had a really interesting experience. We did a vision quest. Do you know what that is?
Does that involve drugs?
No, not at all. It's when you spend time in nature, and it's quite the opposite. You don't have any distractions. So no phone, no books, no journal, no like talking, no eating.
Yeah.
And you just spend time alone in nature doing nothing.
For how long?
36 hours.
Oh, yeah. That's a lot. Damn. And so what, you're just sitting in the desert?
Yeah, we all, as part of our group, we did it part of the training, and we do it here as every training does that, like the longer trainings.
Yeah.
So we went to the beach right over the mountain here, and every girl went to like, we took our own space, so we could see each other like just in the corner of the eye, but we were completely alone. And I was just like lying there.
So no food?
No food, no talking. Water we had. Okay. Yeah. But just nothing. So you're like laying on your back, laying on your side.
Wow.
Other side.
Yeah, that's...
Meditating.
So they do that for every yoga training?
Yeah, the longer ones, like 200 and 300 hours.
300 hours, yeah. Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, so that was one of the most magical experiences. And then you come back and you do a one-hour transformational breathing practice. And I mean, just the whole thing together combined was an incredible experience. I mean, so many things that I did in those days that I never thought I would do. And for me, it was really about like the accomplishment of doing something that I didn't think I could do.
Yeah.
So it was incredible.
I slept... That reminded me of a time when... I slept on a beach in Chicago with my best friend. I guess you'd call it a vision quest now that I'm thinking. That's a good way to reframe it. Mm-hmm. But we got kicked out of this party at this house that we were supposed to stay at in Chicago. Uh-huh. We were downtown Chicago, and we were like, we didn't know what to do, so we just slept on the beach in Chicago. So yeah, I get it.
Was it a spiritual experience?
I think this was when I was like 20, probably 20. So no.
Drugs.
There was some, we're probably drunk. No, I didn't start. I would do a lot of reading about spirituality in my early 20s. And I thought I was really smart and, you know, I could like say mantras and, but I didn't actually feel spirit until I started to practice bhakti. Honestly, I was doing yoga for years, mm-hmm. but something about when I started practicing bhakti, it was like, it like drops something in your heart and then it just feels like it opens. And then it was like, oh, I get it. I get what these people are talking about. But for years, I mean, I was meditating for probably like 5 years, just doing like really rigid Buddhist meditations. Mm-hmm. And yeah, you know, it's like when you open up to the heart, it's just this whole different dimension. It's a whole different grain of reality than and you can't talk about it. But you just see it in certain people when you see that they have connected with life in that way.
Oh, that's beautiful. Wow.
Yeah.
Well, that's a beautiful story. So how did you get from there to starting a yoga school?
Okay, so it was always a thing that I thought would just be a dream fantasy. Mm-hmm. And it took me a while to like get the courage to do that. I think that whatever it is, you know, whatever it is for us, everybody has that. Mm-hmm. I ask people that question a lot. Like, what's the thing that if you could do anything in the world, like what would you do? Mm-hmm. And it's interesting to me because I think that we live in a time that is particularly conducive to that.
Yes.
Like we have a abundance that is, by abundance, I mean like we all have our needs met for the most part, mm-hmm. and it allows us a lot of time and space. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, within that, we have the capacity now to make our dreams reality. And
that's not exactly true, because I feel like so many people, are still living paycheck to paycheck and they're working very long hours, and because they don't necessarily enjoy the work that they're doing, they don't have energy to think about what they want to do with their lives when they get home.
Yeah. I mean, that's also true. Yeah. That's also mm-hmm. true. I've been there. I think you kind of have to go through that for a time. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You have to go through that until you can't anymore. Mm-hmm. Like until it breaks something in your body and then you can't, then you have to do the thing that is inspiring to you. Mm-hmm. But no, you're exactly right. Like, I don't mean to make it sound like I think people say that, like motivational speakers will say that all the time, you mm-hmm. know, like, and that it's not quite that simple. Yeah. So just kind of back to the story. I mean, to be totally frank, I mean, the reason that, like, I've been practicing yoga for 12 years and I like consider myself at this point, like pretty good at it. Like I'm not excellent at it, but I feel pretty good at it. Mm-hmm. Like I know what I'm doing. But starting a business in yoga has nothing to do with how good of a yogi that I am, frankly. I think that the morality and the commitment to truth and the commitment to expansion really help in that. But to be totally honest, I mean, the reason, like, if you're going to start a yoga business, and if you're going to be successful, it's usually how good you are at selling stuff online. Mm-hmm. It's really what it comes down to.
We should say that your school is one of the biggest in the world, or.
Yeah. I don't know any schools that are bigger than us. Like, there might be mm-hmm. one that I don't know of. I think mm-hmm. like Core Power probably does mm-hmm. more trainings than us, but I'm not aware of another school that does more trainings. And it's, again, people don't like search out me. They don't even know who I am. Mm-hmm. But they come to us because we articulate a really particular vision that people mm-hmm. believe in, something that was just something I wanted. And that's always like in the entrepreneur world, we say, scratch your own itch, mm-hmm. like have your project, your creative project manifest from something that just happens in your life that is a problem or something that you know and see, because then when you create it, it's, you're so intimate with it.
Mm-hmm. So like a need that you have.
Yeah. So I literally remember exactly the thought process that I was going through when I was looking for one in India. Well, I was looking for an Indian teacher. I wanted an Indian teacher, someone mm-hmm. with like a smile and a nice face and, you know, just look comfortable. And I wanted accommodation that seemed nothing fancy, but like, you know,
livable.
Mm-hmm. Bonus if there was a Western person there also, because it felt comfortable. So that mix of East and West was just what mm-hmm. I was searching for. Mm-hmm. And I you know, in 2017, I was just kind of looking and there wasn't a lot out there that brought those two together in the way that I was envisioning. And so, yeah, we just created a school around that. And the school is just a container. Like the school is that idea. And we have different teachers that come in and we have, you know, teachers from all over the world that come in. But yeah, people just agree with that idea. Like I think that, you know, I've become a big believer that I think from the Western perspective, we have so much to gain from the East, right? No doubt, right? Yeah. But I think that we also don't realize how much they want to learn from us too.
Oh, really?
And that was a part that I did not expect.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, just that's, I think a lot of spiritual teachers talk about this, like the highest potential of a life now is we say like East on the inside, West on the outside. And that's a new capacity. Like our parents didn't have access to media and YouTube videos of Satguru and meditations from, you know, Indian teachers and be able to fly to India and go on these trainings. Like we can actually do that.
Right.
We're that mix of, you know, being able to like function in the Western materialistic world and have a beautiful inner quality where you close your eyes and you just feel good about life and you're expanding, like having both of those. That to me is like spiritually where we come from. And the people that come on our trainings are all, you know, seeking that.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of things I want to touch upon, but I think that's really beautifully articulated. And also I think it's kind of like a new concept because there is this kind of agreement that if you're a spiritual person, you shouldn't want the external validation.
Yeah. And you know, our teacher Vijet, like he's become kind of one of our lead teachers. He's the most beautiful soul that I know. He said this to me so casually, like we were talking about this and just him and I personally. And he was like, you know, I think our generation has really gotten over that. He's like, we don't need to talk about that anymore. Like we've healed that. And I was like, yeah, you know what? I feel like that's true. Like that just feels like an old karma to me. The idea that like, I think the people who wrote that down, like, you know, in the Bible, how it says something about how like you're more likely to fit through the eye of a pinhead than to enter heaven as a rich person or something like that.
Really?
But to me, what I realized is that in the Eastern world too, any degree to which they were talking about how wealth is somehow against spirituality, think about their lens of the world, right? They're living in a time of like strict feudalism where there's kings and then there's peasants and there's not really anything in between. So yeah, of course, like but we live in a different world. Like we live in a world where if you have the desire, if you have, like you can really shape your external circumstances however you want. And there is, of course, there is like different, people do inherently have different opportunities and, you know, based on their upbringing and certain people have more, it is easier for some people, but we do live in a system that is free or at least more free than it was back then when those things were written. And so, you know, I think that's why you see teachers now like Satguru and the biggest teachers in the world, the biggest spiritual teachers in the world, they're very active in the world, right? I've noticed that they all are involved. Like Satguru has businesses, he has ashrams, he has like centers all over the world. Yeah. Like that requires you to think like a Western person. Right?
Definitely.
So to me, it's all an old argument.
Yeah. Right? Maybe when it was like kings who were the ones that were wealthy, as you mentioned, it was the way that they got there wasn't necessarily pure.
Right. Their dad was a king. And so they're a king and it doesn't matter who they are.
And they also had to sometimes like be brutal in order to stay in power.
Totally.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's just like we can't even, there were dynamics back then that we probably can't even conceive of.
Definitely. And I agree. I mean, my view of like money and wealth is that it's a tool. It's something that allows us to do or to create. Like, let's say Sadhguru wasn't as successful as he is, would his wisdom reach as many people as it does today?
And I think no.
Right.
Because for me, I want an example of a mentor who can operate from both. That's me personally. And I think most people are probably the same.
Yeah.
Where like I'm less likely to take wisdom from someone who's like, you know, living on the street.
Yeah.
You know, and that's not to say that it's not valid, but I think that there's some, like we receive messages when it's embodied wisdom. Mm-hmm. So if there's someone who has embodied a life where they've mastered both of those, yeah, I feel naturally inclined to listen to them.
Of course, you want to listen to the person that achieved what you want to achieve.
Yeah, and I think there are exceptions to that also. Mm-hmm. But if I think about like really putting the deepest parts of me and my trust and beliefs in someone, mm-hmm. I definitely feel like I need that.
Yeah, same as you want to go to a yoga teacher who actually has a very inspiring practice by themselves.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
You said something before about the way that you articulated your message. And I thought that was really interesting because when you said that, I was like, wait, that's what I was looking for as well. When I did my first training, I did it in India, in Goa, and I wanted to do it with an Indian teacher.
Right.
Because I was like, this is an Indian culture, Indian practice. I want to learn it from the origin.
You know what's interesting about that is that there's some people that I assumed everyone was like that, mm-hmm. but not everyone is. Mm-hmm. A lot of people, you know, they don't have that desire to learn from the source. I just found that interesting.
It is interesting. I mean, the thing is that now there are so many incredible teachers who are not Indian. So
right.
I can understand.
I kind of feel like the West, I think like we are kind of in this Renaissance period of yoga. Mm. And I think there was always a part of me that was, a part of me that was searching for the most authentic version of yoga.
Yes. Just right? the most authentic version of anything.
Do you think that?
Yes, definitely.
Yeah. Like I spent so many years and I'm like looking and, you know, you read all this history about it. And then at a certain point, I think I realized that the way that yoga has disseminated in the world is more akin to music. Mm-hmm. So music started somewhere and it was a really simple form, right? It was maybe like one string and a drum. And then the next person hears it and they have something to add to it.
Right.
And what they have to add to it is something that will resonate with their culture. Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. Because it's inspiring to us to want to create things for people around us. So then they take it, they bring it to their town and they take the source, but then they modify it a little. Mm-hmm. And I used to like poo-poo that in yoga. But the thing is like when you look for the original source, it's like trying to grab a river with your hand. Like you can't find it. Uh-huh. You can't. And it's every subsect of India, every ashram that you go to, even the one down the road in India, they have a totally different conception of, you know, what is the priority in yoga.
Yeah.
Right? Uh-huh. And it's changed throughout time. And I think I used to have a very adversarial relation to, I forgot what we were even talking about at this point, but no, let's just go with
keep
it.
Keep going.
I used to have a really adversarial relationship to that, like as if we should be practicing the original form. Mm. And then I realized like, no, be here now. Mm. Like, and now it's taken exactly the form that it needs to take.
Right.
And there's more people practicing yoga than ever. Mm-hmm. And that's beautiful. And people who want to go deeper can. That's still available also. Yeah. So I just had that, I think through like working in yoga, it's kind of helped harmonize a lot of those mm-hmm. old belief systems that I had about what yoga is supposed to be. Yeah. And it's music and it's going to continue to be that way. And I think that's like, that is the highest expression of this art.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I think for me, it's really about authenticity. Like if your teacher is genuine right. and I find that if you respect where the culture is coming from and honor right. it, and then from that place you make it your own, I mean, right. what's more beautiful than that?
Yeah, it's like, I love that you said that authenticity. It's like, I think it's discipline and authenticity. Mm-hmm. If you have both those two things, like you'll be a great yoga teacher.
Yeah, but then like, how do you determine if a teacher is authentic or not? Because they might be still authentic to themselves, but you don't find them authentic.
I think you just know. Mm-hmm. Like you just know when someone is being real.
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. Like I was telling you, like I don't ever listen to podcasts where it's like you can tell there's a script. Mm-hmm. It's just boring.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, yeah.
But someone who's just actually sharing like with what is real to them. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I think that just comes with time. You just start to realize like, oh yeah, my view is valid. Mm-hmm. my eyes are valid. Yeah.
I think, again, it comes to what you're, where you're coming from, like your intention. If your intention is like bringing good to the world and doing something that feels good to you, that's one thing. And then if your intention is to make money off of it or to impress someone, then the outcome is different.
Which could also be a valid intention, like if you're clear about that, right?
Yeah.
If you're clear, like, hey, I'm just doing this to make money, you tell that to the people that are coming.
Yeah.
That's authenticity also, right?
I don't know if anybody would.
You're right. I don't think anyone would actually do that. I do know some comedians who will just like say that. They're like, yeah, just buy my shit. Like, I'm just, this is how I make money. Just buy it.
Yeah. I mean, but there is an interesting point here because yoga is such a sacred practice. Yeah. And I've heard teachers speak about the fact that it's really hard to rely on yoga as your income source, because then that means that at certain points it's tempting to want to teach for making money and not just to share this philosophy. Right.
I for some reason I had a feeling we were going to talk about this. I was thinking about this like just as I was sitting here. This is really interesting. So the Yoga Alliance, a number of years ago, there was in some state they were trying to legislate yoga. Mm-hmm. I don't know the details of it so much, but they were trying to, I don't know, maybe like regulate the degree of certification that you had. Oh. And the Yoga Alliance actually lobbied against regulation of yoga, which, by the way, when I heard that, it actually gave me a lot more respect for them. Mm-hmm. Because you would think that they would do the opposite. Right. Typically, certification organizations want regulation because they have a lot to gain from it.
Right.
But the Yoga Alliance had a position against that. Uh-huh. And their primary legal argument was that yoga is not a profession because there's not enough people that make money doing it. It's like, it might be like 2% of teachers.
Really? And
I don't know that, don't quote me on that exact figure, but it's the proportion of people who, and now since COVID, the number of people who actually make a full-time living doing yoga, like, I don't know, it might be, if I had to guess, you know, maybe 10,000 people. And that's not like large enough to even...
In the US?
I'm making shit up. But
I feel like there's just 10,000 teachers in LA.
but what I'm saying is that all who are making a full-time living only teaching yoga. So their argument is this is just a hobby. It's a hobby. This is not a profession.
Like a practice or a way of living even.
Yeah. And I think like... Honestly, I think as a teacher, that's really important as a new teacher, like that's important to take in, not to say that you shouldn't do it, but just to realize, I think there's a degree of like freedom that you get from that and just realizing like, this can be my hobby.
Yeah.
And this doesn't have to be the thing that supports my life.
Yeah.
And it's really, really hard to do full time. I can only think of like a couple people in my life now that just teach yoga full time, that don't do anything else.
Yeah. Well, I can
a very small number of people.
Yeah. I can like share five. From my own experience.
Yeah. Do you have a different view of that?
Well, I was teaching yoga full time in Israel.
Yeah.
But the thing is that I was teaching so much that I couldn't anymore. Like when I left on this trip, I was like, that's it. I don't want to teach one more class.
Right.
Even though I loved it. Like I still love yoga. And even though I left Israel to come to do a teacher training.
Yeah.
But I feel like there's only certain situations in which you can fully support yourself doing yoga, but that's not what I wanted to
How many classes a week is your do you feel like is your maximum that you could teach?
Well, I was doing over 20 classes a week.
That's a lot.
It's a lot.
That's a lot.
And I was really like, it was too much. But for me, the problem was more that I just couldn't say no. Like if somebody wanted to do another class, it was so hard for me to say no.
Right, right. But I think what I think you're saying is like, it's not really sustainable to teach that many classes.
It's not.
Also, because I bet you were driving around town too to different studios.
Yeah. Definitely.
Yeah.
I mean, I was going from like my student's house to my studio to this, like, you know, like it was going all over. But even if it was in the same place, you know, to do four classes in one day or sometimes five is so hard. And honestly, I feel like that's just doing a disservice to the person because you're not showing up fully as what you can.
Can I ask you a question?
Of course.
This is like total tangent question, but what would you say in your life, what are your two biggest priorities in your life right now? Like, what are the things that you wake up thinking about and processing?
Well, I would say that my number one priority always is just to feel fulfilled and to feel like I'm on my path.
And what are you finding your fulfillment in now?
I'm finding fulfillment in definitely these conversations. I mean, for me, it's like making somebody's day better in whatever form that is. So giving a yoga class, or I do coaching, or, you know, through the podcast. Cool. Yeah. So, you know, in any way that I can make somebody's day better, that's what I find fulfillment in.
Cool.
But I have it as a priority to be able to support myself in a way that I can live the lifestyle that I want to live.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is a good lifestyle.
Yeah. So making people feel better and making money.
Yeah.
It's a good life.
Exactly. I don't think like there should be any shame in wanting to make money.
Yeah, totally. That's what I think we were talking about is like, I feel like our generation has processed that. We're like, we'd like to live a good life. We don't need a bajillion dollars. Yeah. Can you imagine those people that like, I just can't imagine what goes through someone's head when like, I'm really interested. I'm really curious about it. Actually, someone who has like $100 million and like keeps working towards that.
I think that at some point, like there has been studies on this, at some point over a certain amount, it doesn't change at all your happiness or well-being.
Definitely. But I wonder like what really motivates those people. Cause it can't be, at a certain point, it can't be money.
Yeah.
Cause if you have everything, you know, it's like,
and I've heard quotes of people who have that much money and they're like, it doesn't matter. Like I always want more. There's a higher goal that you can
reach. I know. And it's interesting to think about because that's a human too. Mm-hmm. That is just like us.
Yeah.
You know? And of all the things you could do in your life, like why continue to kind of beat that drum? I don't know. That just is really fascinating to me.
Well, what comes up for me is that at a certain place, it gives them happiness, whether it's like a sincere form of happiness or not. That's personal, I think.
So if you could, if I'm trying to think of how I can ask this question. What do you think is the amount of money for you that's like, I'm good, I don't need any more?
That's a good question. I think that for me, it's not really about like a certain amount.
Yeah.
It's about certain needs that I have being met. So I want to live in a beautiful house. I want to be able to like give my kids whatever they want.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
I want to be able to travel, have nice clothes. I love clothes.
Yeah.
I mean, I want to be able to deal with a problem as it comes up without worrying about like, how can I pay for it?
Yeah.
Right. What about you?
So I take this vow in all my projects. And I encourage those working with me to do the same, although I don't require it, to just have a number like, and it doesn't matter what it is. But I've witnessed in like situations when companies, I've talked about this on other podcasts too, like how I really believe that if there was one of the best, just if I could disseminate something like into the collective conscious, it would be the decision for all of us just to, you know, be like, I'm going to cap what I make at a certain point and decide what that is. Mm-hmm. And then the rest I'll work for those around me. Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah.
So for everyone, that number would be a little different, but then we wouldn't get situations. I think a lot of companies, the way they're organized, it's like some people are making $10 million a year and then everyone else is making like $50,000.
Yeah.
And that's not healthy.
No,
it's just, it's inherently like, that's like a little loophole that it's largely because of technology, of what it allows us to do. But I think it has to be something that we, as a culture, we have to come to that point eventually. And not even for the collective good, but I think for the good of us, just so we kind of limit our greed. And I, yeah, all sorts of business people are like, that's crazy, I would never do that. I'm like, how many dinners do you want to eat tonight? Like, do you, after your first dinner, it's like the second dinner has no value to you.
Definitely.
And that applies to our abundance too. Mm-hmm. So I, when I made that decision, I say like it relieved a great burden from me.
So not like always chasing more and more, but like putting a limit on it.
Yeah. It's like, I'll chase what is actually valuable for me. But mm-hmm. at a certain point, these resources are less valuable to me than they would be to someone in my immediate vicinity.
That's right? So true.
Yeah.
Wow. I love that.
Yeah. I really deeply believe in that. Like I just imagine it. And it's not even about like saving the world. It's not about like giving back to charity. I think it's actually about the people around you.
Yeah.
You know,
definitely. That's beautiful. I mean, I feel like, I feel like this should be a law, like everybody should do
that. That would never work. But I think this is why I said, I don't think a law would work, but I think it needs to be something that, like, if people in leadership positions realized
exactly.
For their own good, not for anyone else's, it's for their own good. And if you're really looking at your life holistically, if you're really assessing all of it, not just your success, but really how everyone is interacting with your success, how that forms relationships, etc.
Yeah.
It's so clear to me that that would make people's lives better.
Well, basically it's about sharing.
Yeah.
Yeah. I listened to a podcast once and I don't remember which podcast, but the interviewer always asks a question, like, if you could do one law, what would you do?
Oh, yeah, I think I've seen that.
Is that Jay Shetty, maybe?
Yeah, I'm not sure, but I know what you're... I've heard that, too. Yeah, yeah.
So he asked one of his guests, and she said, sharing. Everybody needs to share. And for me, it was, like, such a light bulb.
Yeah.
Because we teach our kids, like, to share, but we don't do it ourselves.
I think in sharing, it's the recognition that... I think it's so funny how, okay, for example, like 20 seconds ago, we didn't know we were going to be having this conversation, right? Right. Like, we don't know what we're going to even be talking about next. Like, there's, I think when you really like get deeper into your meditative process and observing how reality works, it's just unfolding, right? But then what happens is that our mind looks in hindsight and says, oh, I did that. Mm-hmm. And that belongs to me, but it's not, it's just this thing that's unfolding. And so I think with the way our companies are structured, it assigns ownership to a person, which, and then we start to say, well, this is mine. And that it just goes against nature, where nature is sharing. Like, nature is just the process of creation and then sharing and then destruction.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, by sharing, we're actually just aligning ourselves with the natural forces.
Definitely.
The same way we do in everything. Mm-hmm. And I think I'm really, obviously we've been talking about this for like the last, I don't know how long, but I'm really interested in that because I think I always look for the places that we've gotten out of alignment with nature or we've forgot that business isn't really a thing.
Yeah.
It's not, it doesn't, where does it exist?
Made up.
Is it a paper? It's a made up thing.
Yeah.
And it's when we start to find nature manifesting in that we can go back to something being in harmony. And it will eventually.
Yeah,
it has to.
Definitely. And this reminds me of what we were talking about before, like when you create a business, there's such a difference in your intention of what you're trying to do and the way that you even run the company, because it can be a conscious company, like a yoga school, but then, as you said, like the owner of the company is making 10 times more than the people working there.
I was just talking about, I think this is on my mind because I was just talking about this with Sridhar, who he's the founder of Bhakti Fest, and he's here. Did you interview him, by the way?
I did.
Good. Yeah, he's such a cool example of someone who just, he's really driven, his creation is really tied to his sense of just like wanting to see cool stuff of service being put out in the world. He was telling me a story about how he put 35,000. He might not like me telling you this, but
he told this on the podcast.
He did. Okay. Yeah. So yeah, he puts $35,000 down on a credit card, like in, I forgot what year that was, to create a movie, because he wanted to, right? Mm-hmm. That's so beautiful.
Yeah.
Hey, I'm quickly interrupting the episode to extend an invitation. If you are interested in deepening into any of the subjects we talk about on the podcast, we offer many different experiences on our beautiful grounds here in Baja, Mexico. From 9-day modules such as sound healing and yoga nidra, to breath and meditation, as well as 200 or 300 hour yoga teacher trainings, and many different shorter retreats. Check out our website, yandara.com, to see all the information about the different experiences. Let's get back to the episode.
Well, I feel like I could keep talking about this, but I want to ask you about the functional medicine clinic.
Okay, cool. Yeah,
so, we can get into that. Could you please say how that came about?
Man, that's when you start to look under the hood of our healthcare. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of problems. To me, the biggest problem is that about 60% of people, 60 to 70% of people, have some sort of chronic disease. Mm-hmm. Something really serious and debilitating that really, really burdens their life in a deep way. Like, I talk to people every day who they can't eat, or their kids can't go to school because they've got, like, their digestion is too irregular. You know, they'll just like start, you know.
Yeah.
And our medical system, like, it just doesn't even pretend to have solutions for those things. It's just outside of its purview.
They just give you like a pill for something that doesn't work.
And look, I think a lot of people talk really bad about medicine. And look, I'm not a believer in it, but I think that I'm in that world. I'm in the world of medicine, and I know a lot of doctors, and I've never met someone, I'm yet to meet someone who is like evil. Mm-hmm. It's just this system that we're all in that needs to change. Mm-hmm. And everyone, maybe not everyone, but the people who are on the ground, the doctors, they're so well-intentioned. Like, they devote so much of their life to helping people, but it's almost like they have the wrong tools.
Yeah.
So Wisdom, we are a platform for naturopathic or functional medicine doctors, who, by the way, can do just about everything that a conventional medicine doctor can. Mm-hmm. People just don't know about that institution. They go to a primary care doctor through their insurance.
Right. Because that's what's supported by the government.
That's right. Or the healthcare in the US. And so in our, if you're a client at Wisdom, you get a functional medicine doctor and a nutritionist. And
because nutrition is such a big part of it.
Yeah. And so I was sharing with you like how I learned about that. I was a vegan for 6 years, and I was really resolute that that was the best path of health. Mm-hmm. And I went to see a functional medicine doctor, and he says, okay, well, we'll run some tests. I bet you're going to be low in iron. I bet you're going to be low in vitamin B. And you live in Portland, so there's not a lot of sun. You'll probably be low in vitamin D. Mm. I was like, whatever, you know, give it a try. And he was exactly right. Mm. And I was like, oh, that's interesting. Okay, there's something here. There's more to this than just eating vegetables. Mm-hmm. And I think it just showed me how much there is to know about the body, and how much, like, doctors really do. They know a lot about the body. And when they're empowered with tools of like how to use natural means, it's really special what they can do. So I opened a clinic. We manage practices for functional medicine doctors to just help connect them with people that are otherwise would be looking for a conventional doctor.
Yeah.
And they find a functional medicine doctor. And so, like, you can, if you wanted to be a client, you can join. It's $29 a month, and then you get about half off appointments. So it's kind of like a little network that we've built. Mm-hmm. But working in healthcare is not, it's not easy. It's it's complex. It's so fun though, honestly. Mm-hmm. It's like, I love it.
What about it do you love?
I love a good puzzle. Yeah, like just having to understand like the different scopes of work and legally what we can do in each state. And like, I'm really fascinated by just there's like some conditions, the protocols that can heal certain conditions. And most conditions are really, we don't say heal, we say they're reversible. Mm. So
definitely
autoimmune.
Yes.
Pretty much all digestive conditions, heart disease, diabetes, like they're all very reversible.
And it's just ignorance. Like people don't know what is causing their problems. Right. They don't know that what they're eating is causing this. And it's so easy to change.
And what's interesting and about cheap. That is that like, there's many, I think that chronic disease is one of the largest forms of human suffering on earth.
Yeah.
Let's say just for the sake of accuracy, top three, right? And I think the other ones in that list, like climate change or systematic injustice, like we don't really have a solution for those. Like we don't know how to solve them, at least yet. But that's not the case with chronic disease. Like we know exactly how to solve it, and it's really easy, and it's totally accessible to anyone. They just have to learn.
Yes.
They just learn how to do it, and the world can be healed of this. That's kind of ambitious, but a lot of people can reverse their conditions, and it's just a matter of them getting the information and the guidance. So that's the thing that really drew me to that problem, is just the sort of misalignment of that knowledge. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
So how do you go about like spreading that knowledge, spreading the word?
Well, it's tough. It's tough. Cause I think when you get in clinic, I think a lot of people, I'll just speak for myself. I thought it was like, everyone's just got to be vegan and they'll heal themselves. It's not that simple.
No. It's so individual.
It's so individual. And also you get in these instances where like people, they're so sick that it's so specific what they can do. You know, like one of our clients right now, like she can only eat, the only things that she can digest are rice and meat.
Oh wow.
Yeah. So, okay. So how do you work someone like that who she eats any vegetable and her stomach basically just like explodes, you know? So you have to guide people with a high degree of specificity. To ultimately work them back.
Yeah.
And that's one of the coolest things that I've learned is that the biome, it's so much based on the gut biome. Another topic, we've talked about that for a long time, but, your biome, like it literally learns.
Basically
The bacteria in the gut, it learns and evolves, right? So everything that we eat, it feeds, like if, you know, well, there's nothing around here, but like if you were to eat a carrot, that will embolden a certain type of bacteria in your stomach, and then it gets better at digesting that.
Yeah.
And so, you know, you can bring someone back to healing with like gradual exposure to something to heal their gut, but you know, it's not as simple as just getting everyone to eat vegan.
So if you had one tip for everybody, what would that be?
Oh man. I think my one tip is like, I'm such a believer now in that we have to switch things up. The way I think of it is like this. So chronic diseases come from chronic habits.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
So if you're breathing in smoke every day, it is going to go to your lungs and something's going to manifest in your lungs.
Of course.
If we are eating vegan our whole life, you know, there's a lot of stuff that we're missing. If we're eating a lot of meat, there's ways that will strain our system in other ways too. So I'm such a believer in like, look at the things that you do all the time, air, water, you know, those are usually the things where I find that chronic conditions form from, because the body has all these different detox pathways. And so it's almost like you're just deciding to give one a rest, you know? So my example of this was, I was vegan for 6 years, always tired, you know? And I think a lot of people say, oh, it's because you don't have protein. I don't believe that to be the case. I just believe that when you're vegan, usually about 90 to 98% of the stuff that you're eating is carbohydrates, which breaks down as glucose, which gives you insulin spikes.
Right.
And there was almost a feeling, and I would feel it here. Like I would feel, it was just like everything I was eating was just making me tired. And so I just actually needed to give those organs a rest and switch it up for a while. And then they kind of regenerate, and then you can go back to finding something in balance. But that's my one tip. I think there's like, you know, anytime, if there's one thing I've learned is it's everyone's an individual,
yeah.
And that really switching stuff up is really in our highest good. Mm-hmm. So
I love that. Like looking at what you do all the time,
yeah.
And seeing how you can kind of shift that.
Yeah. Every couple months, just if there's mm-hmm. something you've been eating every day, even if there's certain supplements you've taken for years, just mm-hmm. give it a break. Like mm-hmm. let your body detox of that pathway mm-hmm. and then it'll restore and then come back to doing it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
To be honest, I have been mostly vegan for probably like 10 years.
Yeah.
But for me,
that sounded like a confession. Well, to be honest.
I mean, the way you said it, I was like, should I say I'm vegan?
No. I'm very close to vegan. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm like 98% vegan yeah. still, so. Yeah.
Okay.
Dude, I can't believe, like, how can people judge other people for being vegan? I don't really see how you can judge people either way, to be honest, but how could someone judge someone for being vegan? That's so ridiculous.
Well, I mean.
So you're safe.
There's a lot of different approaches to this, but
yeah.
For me, it was really what my body needed. Like, I don't like eating meat.
Yeah.
So, but I'm not very good at taking the supplements, I have to admit.
Yeah. So what supplements are you taking?
B12.
Yep.
Folate. Mm-hmm. Iron.
Mm-hmm.
And that's it.
That's good. Yeah. That's like the pretty textbook for
yeah.
vegan
but I'm not strict.
Yeah.
About taking it.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing with supplements is you do kind of have to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Uh-huh,
yeah. You got to take them.
So what do you find is like the thing now that makes you feel the best?
Supplement wise?
Lifestyle wise?
Listening.
Mm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Listening to other people and just getting into their world a little bit and getting like relieved of my own mental patterns and just kind of stepping into someone else's world for a bit.
Yeah.
Which I just realized right now that that's what you're doing to me.
Exactly.
You're like, you just Miyagi'd me.
But you're the guest that has asked me the most questions.
Oh yeah.
Yes, oh. Definitely.
Yeah. And so then like maybe a less esoteric answer. I'm really drawn to like Kundalini, like subtler body energies.
Mm-hmm.
To be honest, like I've been doing yoga. Oh no, I have a different answer. Why didn't I think of this? Pilates.
Really?
Love Pilates. Yeah, I do Move with Nicole on YouTube every morning now. Yeah. It's good because I don't really feel the yoga practice in my body anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So I like I'll do a full 90-minute. Like vinyasa sequence. And I just don't feel different in my body.
Mm-hmm.
And I could, you know, rather than like pushing myself into extremes into my practice, I just find other avenues. So yeah. I would say subtle body stuff. So mm-hmm. like Kundalini, Yogi Rishi, amazing, amazing Kundalini teacher. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, so wow. Yeah, that form where you're really kind of going inside and like learning the different energetic areas in your body and Pilates.
I love it. So
do you have you ever done Pilates?
Of course.
Yeah.
I love
what
Pilates.
What do you do?
I like the machine. How do you call it?
The reformer.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's so good because it yeah. keeps your spine relaxed mm-hmm. while you're doing it. And you're yeah. doing these like, yeah, I love reformer.
Yeah. I haven't done that in a long time though.
Yeah. 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 Those classes are really expensive too. They're like, they're like $50 for one of those classes.
Everything in the US is so expensive.
Is it not that way in Israel?
I mean, Israel is pretty expensive, but LA took it to another level.
Right. Have you been to Erewhon?
Yes.
Yeah.
The supermarket.
Yeah, yeah.
They're crazy.
Yeah.
They're really crazy, yeah.
Yeah.
But so good. Well, I mean, this is a very different topic and you touched upon it in the beginning, but yeah. I think it's interesting because you said basically every business is about the marketing. So could we talk about that, how you approach marketing
yeah.
as a conscious person?
Disclaimer in the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
Every business is about marketing in the beginning.
Okay.
So I think I witnessed that a lot of people, when they're working in their realm of their of something that's sacred to them,
mm-hmm.
they don't want to be a salesperson.
Right.
They don't want to have to sell something. And I think where I assume that comes from is a place of wanting to not be greedy, which is really admirable. Mm-hmm. However, if you don't learn to sell something, you don't really have anything.
If
right?
people don't know about it, they
yeah, they there's can't no you don't it. There's nothing to be greedy about because yeah. you're not even in the arena yet.
Right.
So it's like build it first, and then once the opportunity to be greedy even presents itself, then decide how greedy you want to be at that moment. Mm-hmm. But until you're there, you know, I think this is what entrepreneurs, this is like the kind of thing entrepreneurs know that people outside of don't know. It's like, you've just got to master the sale.
Yeah.
So whenever you're starting something, your first year is all about just learning how to sell it. Mm-hmm. And it's really hard.
Right.
Selling something is really, really hard. Mm-hmm. It takes a lot in this world. The cool thing is when you figure it out, you've pretty much got it forever. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's really that simple. It's mm-hmm. like just your first year, just figure out how to sell something. Mm-hmm. And figuring out how to sell something, I think a lot of people operate from the place of, they have a really specific vision in their mind, and then it's just trying to convince everybody else in the world that they need that thing.
Right.
That's not how you sell something.
So how do you sell something?
To sell something, you have to listen. Mm. Right? So, real example, when I started Wisdom, the functional medicine clinic, I knew nothing about it. Mm-hmm. Right? And so, you know, I put out a page and would run some ads to it, and people would call in. Mm-hmm. And I would just talk to them. I would listen. Mm-hmm. And I first started saying, okay, well, that's going to be, you know, $2,500 and you're going to get this and this and this. And they'd be like, no, I don't want that. So then I had to come up with something new. Uh-huh. And I've literally done over 1,000 phone calls with patients in the last 6 months.
Wow.
And from each one, you just learn about everything going on for them. Mm-hmm. and what we've landed on where we're at now. And it works and it sells. Mm-hmm. That's the process of starting a new anything.
Yeah.
Right?
I think that's so interesting because in the beginning, you talked about creating a business from kind of scratching your own itch, something yeah. that you want to create, but then yeah. in selling it, the approach is different.
That helps. I mean, it you can get a lot further faster if you really know it intimately as a consumer, mm-hmm. right? You have to have that lens of like what people who are actually spending money on this, like just what's going on? What are they wanting? Just where's the conversation with that?
Yeah.
So yeah, it helps if you really know it, but mm-hmm. I loved the challenge of having to figure out something that was totally foreign mm-hmm. in healthcare.
Yeah.
And it just really came from like listening and kind of like, I just think of it like a sculpture that mm-hmm. you're just chiseling always. Yeah. And I still am, you know, yeah. we're always chiseling that thing that we're selling.
Refining it.
Right. Right. Yeah. And just kind of changing the way we talk about it to people, changing what they're getting. Mm-hmm. And I think that process, the process of like starting East West was similar. And like I did the first like 600 phone calls mm-hmm. and you just learn it. You just put yourself in the arena and you yeah, learn it.
Definitely.
And I think like, yeah, that is how you learn to build an organization, right? Mm-hmm. It all happens from that.
Yeah.
A lot of time,
learning,
a lot of sacrifice,
yeah.
you know, a lot of parties and, you know, travel opportunities that I don't take because that's more important to me.
Yeah.
But yeah, you've really got to be in a place to like really take that on. You know, it's yeah. like having a kid, I say. And the first year is the hardest. Mm-hmm. And then it kind of gets easier and easier. There's tough moments throughout. It's very worth it. Yeah.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
Beautiful. Yeah, so I mean, from what I'm hearing is that it's really about finding kind of the language and the language of the organization and how you want to show up for other people and
yeah.
listening a lot to what people actually need, right?
Right, right. And doing that without any idea of what it's going to look like, how you're going to serve them. Mm. Like I've heard some really cool stories about people who will think they have a really good idea and then they'll kind of like start testing something. And in the process of them testing that initial thing,
yeah.
they'll learn something that they weren't thinking about at all, but they're like, hey, this is a really good opportunity.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. I love entrepreneurship because it really forces you to be egoless in that way.
Mm-hmm.
In that you can't rely on your ideas. Mm-hmm. You've just got to follow what's present.
Wow.
You got to follow like where people are at presently
yeah.
and like just selling to them. This is something I tell people a lot. I think a lot of people in like the healing world and the yoga world, everyone says, well, everyone needs yoga. Yes. Yeah. Okay. But you don't sell someone something that they need. Mm. You sell them what they want.
Right.
Because if they don't know that they want it, it's not even in their conscious field they're not even looking at it. Right. It's not they're a priority not for them. It. Right.
Yeah.
Like everyone has priorities in their life. Mm-hmm. That's just how it is.
Yeah.
And so when you're starting a business, you're matching up an offering with people's priorities.
Right.
But I think so many people like they operate from that place of like, this is the thing the world needs. Mm-hmm. Right. Like, well, you might think that, but yeah. Then when you put it out, you get that really harsh reflection of like, do people actually need this?
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah.
And if you're willing to adjust and change it, you'll do really well. Mm-hmm. But if you're going to entrench yourself in that belief that I'm only going to do things this way and this is what's going to serve people,
yeah,
you won't really get anywhere.
So we finished where we started with not making too many plans and not being rigid to your plan.
I like how you did that. Yeah, that's right. That's exactly right. It's a great lesson, mm-hmm. truly. Yeah.
Yeah. Beautiful. So I'm looking forward to our next conversation
because
I feel like we can keep talking for a long time.
Totally. I have many more questions for you.
Good. We'll save it for next Bhakti Fest.
Cool. Are you going to go to the Bhakti Fest in September?
Who knows? I'm not making plans, man.
Nice. Nice.
We'll move on to the closing curiosity question.
Okay.
First one is, what is something you've changed your mind about?
I was going to say Pilates again because I used to think it was so lame. Yeah, so that's my answer, Pilates.
Love it.
Yeah.
Love Pilates. What is something you didn't think you could do when you did?
I was going to say Pilates again. No. What is something... I'm trying to find a genuine answer here. What is something I didn't think I could do that I did?
You made so many businesses. You've...
Like, I don't mean this to sound, like, brash in any way, but I just don't... I assume I can do everything. Mm. I think that's kind of the entrepreneur spirit.
Yeah.
There's a lot of things, like, I know I can't do mm-hmm. that I would just never attempt to. Mm-hmm. But if there's like something I'm doing, it's like I'm doing this because I believe I can do it. Does really? That make sense? Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I wouldn't put my energy towards it. Like mm-hmm. surfing would be terrible at surfing. I don't have the energy to do that. And so maybe next time we talk, that will be my answer. That's mm-hmm. an example of something that I don't think I can do.
Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting to realize that like you have things that you don't think you can do.
Oh, definitely. I'm not thinking of them.
You're
right.
Not
like I'm not, they're not a part of my process. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
What gives you hope?
What gives me hope is people like Govind Das, people like Yogi Rishi, people like Sridhar who dedicate their lives so selflessly to giving what the love that they've gotten from their teachers back to the next generations. Yeah. Every time I'm here, it's just, I'm so humbled by them.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
Last question. Okay. What are you curious about right now?
What am I curious? I'm curious about what everyone else on the retreat is doing right now.
Probably singing something. Beautiful. Well, Adam, thank you so, so much.
Yeah, thank you.
I'm so happy this worked out.
Yeah, this was fun.
Yes. Now, after this time to nurture your mind and your spirit, we invite you to take a moment to consider others. A kind wish might come to mind. Know that what we learn becomes more valuable when we apply it and share it with others. So share this episode on Instagram stories, tag Yandara and I, or share with a loved one so that more people can benefit from it. Our hope is that the search will lead you home to who you already are, to what was always there. We'll be back next week with more inspiration, honest conversation, and insight into the energetic world around us. Thank you for listening and watching.